of the day, Silva versus Ferry, case number 06-1295. Mr. Kinsler.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Brian Kinsler. I represent the petitioner appellant William Silva. This case presents two different issues. First, what is the effect of a concession of guilt in closing argument by counsel? And second, the finer point, I think, whether or not the district court erred in determining that a concession of guilt did not, in fact, take place in this case. Silva does not challenge the conclusion of the district court with respect to application of chronic, the ineffective assistance of counsel case, the companion case of Strickland that decided when prejudice should be presumed. Silva does not challenge the district court's analysis. It is virtually identical to the analysis and to the arguments that Silva has made since the outset of his case. He was convicted in August of 2000. There have been briefings in the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, a petition to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a petition for cert to the United States Supreme Court, and, of course, the habeas decision that's on review here. At every stage, Silva has made the same claim that chronic, Herring, and more recently Nixon versus Florida compel a finding that chronic must apply and that there must be a presumption of prejudice where counsel concedes guilt. And so unless there are any questions about application of those cases to this case, I'd like to move on to what I think is maybe a finer point, but still an important one, and that is whether or not the district court erred in determining that the state court finding that there was, in fact, a concession, whether the district court violated the federal habeas standard of review with respect to the facts. In briefing, the state has...
The state court finding that there was a concession, I believe that's... The Wisconsin Court of Appeals said there was a concession of guilt here, or an admission of guilt. And Judge Griesbach kind of recharacterized that and said, if you really look at this closely, this isn't what really happened here. But is a federal habeas court bound to accept that kind of a characterization as opposed to a finding of fact by a state court?
It does so all the time. In this particular case, this is not a finding of fact, something that may have been submitted to a jury, a question that may have been submitted to a court, or a credibility determination. This is something that was said on the record by counsel. These sorts of things, concessions, waivers of rights, these sorts of things are self-apparent.
Most of the violations, when you're talking about the chronic standard, are simply easy to apply. Somebody didn't was denied a counsel, period. Some fundamental flaw in the proceedings. Here, apparently, I mean, you certainly agree that if Strickland applies, there's no prejudice. And you can't win under Strickland.
I can't say that because I happen to think that in a bench trial,
I
won't concede anything. But one of the things I certainly won't concede is that if counsel stands in front of a bench trial without a jury that could nullify, but in front of a court and says, you know, I suppose my client's guilty, but it was really pretty minor. Once that happens, there's not the possibility of jury nullification. A court is required to find guilt under those circumstances, I would say. And therefore, I think that prejudice could be found under Strickland, but that's not this case.
Factually, why isn't it the proper view of what happened here is the judge saying, or the lawyer saying, let me paraphrase it, but technically, if you believe what this six-year-old girl said, technically there's a violation. That is not really a concession of guilt?
Because there's a difference between sentencing and trial. And in this case, counsel chose the wrong time to surrender the sword. And that's precisely when surrender of the sword, and I use that phrase intentionally, it doesn't just come to mind. I think it represents very clearly the role of counsel at closing argument. Especially, not qualifiedly, but especially in front of a bench trial where jury nullification is simply not an issue, where amelioration is simply not an issue, where asking for perhaps a verdict that has some conflicts in it is not an issue. There's only one issue in closing argument, and that's guilt or innocence. To give up...
No, it can often be whether there's just proof beyond a reasonable doubt of guilt or innocence, which is different than factual being guilty or not guilty.
I'll concede that, but I still think that doesn't directly address the problem here. I don't think there is any question that counsel can function as counsel is supposed to under the Sixth Amendment and concede guilt to the sole charge for which someone is tried where there is no lesser included and no reasonable strategic possibility. In this particular case, he gave up his client's case where a judge was not even in a position to not accept counsel's concession. The prejudice is absolutely clear, and that's why we've argued it under Cronic from the very beginning, because it is such a clear violation of the Sixth Amendment right. And if one simply takes Cronic and Herring and puts them together, they fit hand in glove. This is the Wisconsin Court of Appeals very clearly, unreasonably refused to extend the basic principles of Cronic and Herring to this case. And I just can't see an argument that there was any value in it. And I think the district court was very clear in their position. And I think we should adopt that. I see that my light is on. I just want to say very briefly before we get before the state responds that I do believe nonetheless that the district court was wrong in its overturning a factual finding, and by the fact that it granted the certificate of appealability itself, conceded that it was reasonable for the Wisconsin Court of Appeals to find as a matter of fact that a concession took place. Thank you.
Weber.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Greg Weber, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Wisconsin, representing Catherine Ferry as respondent appellee today. We would ask this court to hold, first and foremost, that the analytical framework for this case should be Strickland and not Cronic, that Strickland governs Silva's claim of ineffective assistance of counsel in the federal courts.
So the district court was wrong in applying in holding that Cronic was the correct Supreme Court decision to apply in this habeas case?
Yes, we believe that the district court erred in applying Cronic as the analytical framework, but because the court correctly found that this wasn't a concession of error case, we agree with the district court's finding with respect to that aspect of the decision. If this court does believe that this is a Cronic situation, that Cronic applies to Silva's claim, then it should conclude, as the district court did, that Silva's counsel did not concede his client's guilt in closing argument, and that Silva's inability to demonstrate prejudice in the context of this case requires that his claim be rejected.
This is kind of an unusual situation, I think.
It's a very unusual situation, Judge Evans.
The court saying... The Wisconsin Court of Appeals saying Strickland applies, not Cronic, and this was a concession of error, and the federal habeas court saying, nope, you're wrong, Cronic applies, not Strickland, but this isn't a concession of error.
Brian and I were talking before this argument. Every court, every judge that has touched this case has come to a different conclusion or has reasoned in a different way to a conclusion than its predecessors, and the possibility exists that this court will as well.
We might have a third way.
We'll be interested in seeing it. You asked Mr. Kinstler if the federal habeas court was bound to accept the Wisconsin Court of Appeals' characterization of this as a concession of guilt, and I find that word characterization to be important here. A state court finding of fact, assuming that this is a finding of fact, a state court finding of fact is only as good as the evidence in the record that supports it. In this situation, because this involved a discrete aspect of the record, the defense attorney's closing argument, the district court in habeas, I believe, was able to review trial defense counsel's argument and make its own determination as to whether or not it constitutes a concession of guilt. And when that is compared with the cases that we cite on brief, in other cases involving concessions of guilt, we find that concessions really need to be specific, absolute, beyond any kind of reasonable dispute. And we certainly don't have that here because we have different courts looking at what trial defense counsel did and reaching different conclusions as to whether or not it constituted a concession of guilt. And as I listen to Mr. Kinstler's argument, I find myself wondering also whether this is an actual finding of fact made by the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. When we call what the court did a characterization, I think that's significant. I think the Court of Appeals could be, the State Court of Appeals in this case, could be seen as accepting a characterization proffered by the defense and saying, even if we treat this as a partial concession of guilt or movement toward a concession of guilt, there is another interpretation that can be put to it. And in the totality of the analysis, we still find that trial defense counsel's performance in this case, at least insofar as Strickland is concerned, that trial defense counsel's performance was within that wide range of reasonably acceptable conduct, and that even if it were deficient, that no prejudice resulted under the facts of this case.
Why did counsel make that statement?
I think counsel was...
How does that statement in any way help Mr. Silva?
If you parse out the closing argument, there are really five separate points that were made. Defense counsel began by saying it's difficult to cross-examine a young child. And in saying that, and in his testimony and post-conviction proceedings, I think his concern was that he didn't want to appear to be badgering or beating up on a vulnerable witness. He also said she was truthful to some extent. He didn't elaborate, and he didn't specify which aspects of her testimony he believed was truthful. That concession, I think, reasonably, with respect to the trial court, could be seen again as, I'm respecting the fact that I have a child witness here, a potentially vulnerable witness. In some aspects of her testimony, she may have been truthful. He then went immediately into an analysis that suggested the child wasn't able to accurately relate time. That goes to the witness's consistency, and her concept of time being suspect would give the court a reason to believe that perhaps in other aspects of her testimony she was not reliable. He went on to suggest that in this case any physical contact that occurred was de minimis. He suggested that technically this is a first-degree sexual assault. I submit that that's simply because of the nature of the charge that was made. And he claimed and closed, and this is very significant, he claimed the state hadn't proved the elements of the offense beyond a reasonable doubt. That language standing alone, I think, takes this out of the realm of a concession of guilt. It may not have been the most powerful closing argument. It may not have been the most powerful closing argument he could have made under the facts and circumstances of this case. But it certainly wasn't a full concession of guilt. And it doesn't approach the types of cases, the types of situations under Chronic where prejudice would be presumed.
Well, certainly we'd know more about what his thinking was if he had specified at the end of the closing argument exactly what elements hadn't been met. And we have a situation here where we don't have a lesser included offense. So, I mean, I think that's, yeah, he said that. That he didn't believe the state had met all the elements, but he didn't point out where the state failed. And when he talked about the technically first degree, we don't have a second degree, lesser included.
No, he didn't. He didn't specifically spell out which elements of the offense he thought had not been met.
Right, and so that's a problem when he says technically there was, you know, the touching, and you know, but it wasn't.
It would certainly make my argument stronger if he had said, I don't think the state has proven that this contact was for purposes of sexual gratification, or that the contact was with the small of the back rather than the buttocks. Had he done that, had he broken out the specific elements that he felt had not been proven, that would certainly make my position stronger. But I don't think that was necessary in order for this court to conclude, as did the district court, that this doesn't constitute a concession of guilt. And again, if you compare this argument to the quotation in the state's brief, and I'm trying to find the page, where we present a number of situations. There we go. United States versus Williamson at page 9 of the state's brief, red brief. Williamson presents a list of cases where courts found that trial counsel's conduct constituted a concession of guilt. And the concessions in each of those cases are very straightforward, leave nothing to the imagination as to what trial defense counsel's intent was. None of them are, the one in our case, the one in Silva's case, is just not as specific as the concessions in the cases cited in Williamson. I always prefer to answer questions.
Of course, Williamson, that was a direct appeal, wasn't it?
United States versus Williamson, I'm assuming it's a federal appeal, not a habeas case.
Right. And so the court wasn't required to defer to previous findings as we are here.
I believe that's right. You're taking me into an area of federal law that I'm not right. That familiar with. The deference standards may be different. Is there anything else?
That's all.
Then we rest on brief.
Got a couple of minutes.
I do, and so I'll try to be as quick as I can. Forgive me if I go too fast. Of course, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals found that counsel conceded. Counsel's words were right on the record. The trial court understood them as a concession of guilt and specifically said so. The majority, the concurrence, and the dissent, and this is just a three-judge panel, mind you, in each of the three opinions of the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, it was clearly understood as a concession of guilt, and that was what they based their respective analyses on. The state of Wisconsin, until briefing before this court,
decides that Strickland was going to apply, then this is a simple case.
Which court, Your Honor?
The Court of Appeals. State Court of Appeals. Once they decide we're going to apply Strickland here, that pretty much is the end of the case.
I don't think so for the reason I stated before. That is, when counsel concedes guilt, I will not concede that a court sitting as a trier of fact isn't supposed to take that concession. This was not a case, mind you, where the state, and the state has said this throughout, where the evidence was overwhelming. It was far from overwhelming. This was a case that was tried in 60 pages of transcript, and that's in large point print. This was a very quick case. There were no eyewitnesses. There was a young victim with ambiguous testimony. There was no confession, no admissions by the defendant.
Before an experienced trial judge.
Yes.
All right.
Nevertheless, that doesn't mean that the evidence was overwhelming. I guess at the end of the day, and State of Wisconsin brought this up, Mr. Weber brought this up, you know, I don't think there's any question that Cronic applies. I think the district court was correct in determining that should a concession of guilt take place, there's no question. But this was not a case in which there was not a warm body. This is a case in which the defendant would have been better off if there was no warm body there, because the warm body was working against him. And so I think Cronic has to apply. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under...